Downloading. 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
Hi, I'm Stephen Scott.
I'm Sean Preece.
And I'm Tim Schwartz.
Hey! Woo and indeed woo. Hello. Yes, it is Tech Talk. We're back once again. And listen, we got a complaint in, guys. Sean and Tim are here. Look, we know who's here, right? Sean and Tim, hello.
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 I've always got to do the introduction. It's in the contract. Sorry. But yes, we got an email in this week from someone who says, right, look, stop the nonsense and the carry on, and then you'll be able to put in more features in our show.
Oh, I see. Right, yeah, again, it's a fair point.
No, it's not. It's a terrible idea.
It is a fair point, but I thought the nonsense was a feature. Did I miss the memo on that? I'm sorry.
I thought we were having fun. I honestly thought we're having... Now you want to have less fun and talk more about geeky tech. Right,
yeah, but
okay.
Then we do that, then we'll get emails saying, wait, what happened to the fun? You need to have more fun and include the geeky
exactly.
Tech.
Exactly. Yeah. So this week, the hashtag is fun or geek. That is the hashtag...
You decide.
Yeah, you decide. Email in techtalk@rnib.org.uk, hashtag fun or geek. Or, you know, just say fun or geek. That's entirely up to you. Anyway, yes, we've got lots to get through this week. I have got a big revelation to put out there because, you know, some people might have heard me already say this, you know, across many of the different places I go and talk. And, well, you might be surprised if you haven't heard this about my choice, my next choice of computer. Will it be a Mac, PC, Chromebook, other?
Have you made a decision? Is that what you're telling us today?
I have made a decision, and I'm going to share it with you today. Are you shocked?
No, I'm not shocked at all. We'll see how long it lasts for about 5 minutes until next week when you've changed your mind.
Oh, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it.
Yeah, how many
telling people how
choices
I am.
Are you going to make in a year's time? But no, I'm not shocked that you made a choice. The choice, I think, is quite shocking considering what we know about you, what the audience knows about you. If they keep that in mind, I think the choice is quite interesting, yes.
Cliffhanger.
Yeah. Doof, 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 doof.
Stay tuned.
Right, so that's coming up. We've also got the news as well. Tim has done all the work on the news this week. Because you know, Tim
this week,
yeah, okay, all right, okay. So you do it every week, and what I do is I take the credit. This week, I thought I'd share the credit, Tim.
Oh,
Schwartz.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
So that's all coming up on the show. So, yes, I decided to make an announcement this week because, well, you know, look, this show's all about me, as you know. I don't care about anything else. I only care about me. And I
was going to say, yeah, because the people need to know what computer Stephen Scott is using, obviously.
It's a serious business, you know. I know people live or die by this, so I thought I'd better put this out there. Yeah, so I've decided on a new computer for... going forward, because at the moment all my computers feel really old or sort of botched together one way or the other, and I use computers at work and that's all great, but you know, I need something at home that's mine, I can do all my stuff on, that's up to date and modern and can handle, you know, now I'm using JAWS, I'm thinking, you know, I'd want something that might be able to handle that if I was going down that route, or you know, something with VoiceOver, if it's going to be VoiceOver I want it to be fast, you know, and I've looked at the different options with Mac, PC, and then recently Chromebook as well. Chromebook really, really intrigued me with what it's capable of. But I have come to a conclusion, and that conclusion is born out of this. A lot of people know me as a bit of a bit of an Apple fanboy. Tiny,
just
tiny bit.
A bit.
Tiny
yes.
bit. I've only got an Apple Watch, AirPods, 2 iPhones, an iPad Pro, a MacBook Pro at work, No, that's
you're
it.
Such a sheep.
Yeah.
And I believe you and I were talking about this a while back. Didn't you have a Mac even as far back as the late 80s, early 90s? So you've been a Mac guy for a long time.
Well, I didn't have one then, because, I mean, to buy one would have meant that my mother and father would have had to remortgage the house they didn't own. But, you know, at that time I was using them at school.
And, at school, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and I used it in school. I had one of the first laptops, the first PowerBook laptops. I think it was a 140. It wasn't even a 140C, which was a color one. I had the one before that was black and white. I mean, I had a black and white laptop. That's how old I am, kids.
You went to a posh school. I only had the BBC Micro and the Acorn, I think. That was it.
Do you know, I'm going to tell you a quick story about this. I went to a very normal, everyday school. I did apply for private school. You know, yes, blind people can do things.
Didn't get in.
Maybe I shouldn't say this on air. But you know what? I'm going to say it anyway, because this is what happened. I applied for a very prestigious school in the city I was living in, as in born in. That's all I can say on that one, because it'll probably get found out. But here's the thing. I applied for it. I was accepted into the school. I passed the entrance exam. I was on my way to private school to, who knows, maybe become an award-winning journalist or a lawyer taking on all the big cases. And then I went to the private school and they said, oh, I'm sorry, you know, you're blind. Can't really do anything for you.
Ooh, wow. Different times, you see. Different generation.
Yeah, it was back in the 1700s. It was a different time. So I didn't go to private school. I went to everyday dual public school, and do you know what? I had the greatest time. I learned things I never thought I'd ever learn. We'll not get into too much of that.
We'll discuss that later off the air. Yeah.
That's in the extra. Yes. But I just learned so much, and I got great opportunities, and I met some brilliant people. And hey, I even met my wife. So how good is that?
You know, it's lovely. School gave me a lot. Dickens, that story. That was lovely. Well
yeah,
done.
I think that's what it was. Dickens, you said, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it was. Yes, let's move on.
Dickens. Yeah. Dickens. So,
again, all for the extra. But yes, yeah, so I at school, we had a visual impairment unit that was kind of attached to the school. Where we were housed, a bit like
housed,
a bit like hamsters that are brought into the technical lab. You know, there's a separate bit just for
dissected.
Them. The hamsters don't get to run around with all the other kids. No, they get put in the box, and that's what happened to us. So in there we had this guy Aidan. Now Aidan was a lovely guy, and if you're listening, I'm sure he's not, but if he is, then hello, because he was the guy. He was actually the son of one of the VI teachers, the VI unit teachers who worked in there and gave us all the kind of extra support we needed. And he would come in occasionally, and this probably wouldn't even be allowed nowadays, but he would come in and he would sit with us all, and he was just an absolute geek. And I loved spending time with him because he'd just teach me so much about Macs. And he was interested in them, and he kind of forced a lot of the, well, forced is a strong word, but he kind of put across the idea that Macs would be a good idea in this school.
He planted the apple seed.
He did. He planted the apple seed. That's the name of the
well
book,
done,
if ever there was one. That beautiful, Sean.
Thank you.
But yeah, so anyway, I that's how I got into Macs, and it was kind of down to him. So I had the PowerBook, and then, you know, when I left school, I had a bit of a fractured relationship with it because basically it was too expensive to buy. And then when the big, the little iMacs came out, yeah, remember the ones that were all different colours?
Yeah.
And that was kind of what brought the Mac back, if you like.
It was.
There was another version that came out, and I only can describe it as a lampshade base. White.
That was the one. That was the one that got it all back on the map, made it trendy again.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool. I had this big silver bit that came out of the top of this lampshade base that held the monitor, and it was a flat screen monitor at that time. And it was just a wonderful machine. It was one of the original iMacs. I loved it. Very recently, I had to take it to the recycling dump, which was quite unnerving.
Should have saved it. It's probably worth a fortune now.
No, I don't think
really.
So. No. Worth nothing. But here's the thing. That was my kind of experience, and I love Macs and all the rest, and I have been an Apple fanboy for many years. But since turning to VoiceOver and not the screen, my relationship has changed a little bit. And I think it's partly because, if I'm honest, I think it's because VoiceOver to me, and I know there are people out there who love VoiceOver, so I apologize in advance. I can't believe I'm apologizing to Apple fans. But here I am. But I'm apologising to Apple fans to say, look, I get why you love it. I think it is great. But for everyday fast working, it's not there. It's just not there.
Again, with your controversial statements, I know people that love it and use it for work.
Yeah, well, we know people, don't we? I mean, we know friends of ours, you know, who've been in touch with us, and friends who, you know, we talk to outside of here who say, listen, you know, Stephen, you're completely wrong about this, and I know that Mac is the only way. But, you know, I guess it's down to personal preference. And this kind of leads me to the point where I think, you know, what a great place we're now in, where we do have choice.
Exactly.
You walk into a PC store, you know, every computer in there is accessible to you.
And they're viable choices. It's not just, oh, it's accessibility for accessibility's sake. As we learned recently, Chromevox is viable and useful. You know, having JAWS or NVDA and even VoiceOver on a Mac is viable and useful. And as we've talked about recently, Microsoft is hopefully going to be making their Raider a little bit more viable. I don't know how viable, but we'll see. So, yeah, to be able to get a mainstream computer off the shelf with good, useful options for screen readers, it is an amazing time.
It is an amazing time. And it kind of makes me think, well, this gives me options. But, you know, whilst there are many options out there, you would think that Mac would be my number one choice, I think I'm going to choose...
Drumroll, please.
The PC.
Wow.
And that's something I never thought I'd see. I would never have imagined me going out there and buying a new PC. Like, actually going to a store with money and buying a PC. That wasn't me going to a charity shop and saying, do you have a PC that happens to cost 50 pence? If so, I'll buy it.
Well, now, this is interesting because last year, you started to go all in on the Macs.
Yeah, I did.
So what's changed? Is that just purely your experience of switching over to relying on the screen reader more than the screen?
Yeah, and it's look, I've got to be so open or as much... as open as I can, because I know the words we say influence people, right? I know that, and I know you, many of you listening, thinking, right, what's wrong with it? There isn't anything wrong. This kind of all kicked off in my mind, although I did go all in the Mac. This kind of kicked off when Jonathan Mosen, I'm not blaming Jonathan, but Jonathan did, on this program, he talked about it, say goodbye to the Mac, if you remember. And he wrote a big blog about it, and lots of people were kind of intrigued by it. But he talked about the kind of things I'm now realizing about the Mac, and that is that it is very capable. The screen reader on it is excellent. VoiceOver is very good, but it's a cumbersome screen reader. Lots of keystrokes to remember, lots of things to do. The interaction process never annoyed me at the start, but it annoys me when I'm in a position where I'm moving faster and I want to get things done.
I totally agree. The interaction model was the biggest hurdle for me when I got my Mac Mini, because I just wanted to learn the Mac because it was getting so popular. So I wanted to learn the Mac OS. And coming from Windows, you know, all my life Windows, I just could not get my head around interacting with things. And people were explaining it to me and saying, look, actually, it's a good thing because you can scan across a web page or an app really quickly. And only if you want to go into more detail, like a toolbar, then you interact with it and go into it, which made sense. But in use, I just found it so slow. And I like that word, cumbersome. And I felt exactly the same.
It is definitely cumbersome. I found the same thing. I don't use a Mac on a regular basis, but I have used Macs. And I agree. I think the VoiceOver experience on the Mac, as good as it is, and as grateful as I am that they've done it, it is cumbersome. And honestly, if I was to pick VoiceOver on a Mac versus doing it on an iPad or an iPhone, I know it's a different experience, yet similar as far as, you know, screens and how VoiceOver interacts. But I'd rather just sit and do it on an iPad or an iPhone if I'm going to use VoiceOver. That being said, what you're talking about, Stephen, with the less cumbersome use of JAWS, and I know there are tons of keystrokes for JAWS, so, you know, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of things to learn there as well with that or NVDA or others, but it just seems simpler in some way. It seems faster some way. I don't know how better to describe it, but I agree.
Logical,
with you.
Maybe. Logical, I think, is the thing. Yes. With JAWS. And to some extent with NVDA as well. Narrator is kind of going down this route. We're hearing that in the new build of Narrator, when it comes out, I think autumn's next update, you'll see some big changes with the narrator. They're making it much more aligned to the kind of ways we would expect to use JAWS and NVDA. And I think that's good. And that kind of alignment helps because it gets us to a position where if you're switching on a PC, I mean, I think about it. When I use narrator on, as I've been doing the other day, actually, I was using a computer and I had to turn on narrator on Windows 7 to get to a file. And it was just awful. Yes. But, you know, it really was. I mean, it took forever to get there. It was useless, really.
Yep.
Mac is not... I don't have that experience on a Mac. It gets the job done.
Absolutely.
But let me explain the interaction model a bit for those that don't know. So, you know, you have your window on the screen. Now, visually, it appears as a rectangle window. Down the left-hand side, you'll have what in Windows you'll call a tree view. Mac calls a sidebar. Along the top, you've got your menu bar, which you would get on a PC, which is like file and edit and view and all that. But on a Mac, you might have other tools in there, maybe different views and all that. It's just laid out slightly differently. Instead of drop-down menus, it's just buttons. And then you've got your right-hand side just below. You'll have where the files are. So that's your standard Windows Explorer or Finder view. Now, on a PC with JAWS or NVDA, you would sort of just tab around the different parts of the screen. So you would just tab around that window, tree view, item list. You know, if you want to go to your menus, you press the Alt key and it'll get you into file and edit and all that by moving around, or you can use the shortcuts if you want. But on a Mac, what you have to do is you have to arrow around blocks of the screen. So it takes that window and puts it into three blocks: sidebar, menu, and or toolbar, actually, as it's called, toolbar, and then the window itself. And then to get into the, you then sort of interact with that element. So you would interact with that window, and that would get you into sometimes a folder list, sometimes not. Sometimes it takes you into other parts of the screen. It gets a bit confusing. But it gets in, eventually you can get in there, and then you have to remember that when you want to leave that, you've got to sort of uninteract with it and come back out of it again using various commands, using your VO key and your up and down arrow to interact. It gets cumbersome after a while, and when you're trying to quickly do things, that's one thing I don't like. Now, on the web, however, and I think NVDA is actually winning on this one, the way the Mac has the ability to go into a menu on a web page that actually details for you every single heading and link, and you can jump between all that, you know, left and right will take you through from headings to links to lists to whatever. That is a very easy feature. On NVDA, it has similar on a sort of tab basis. You know, you just sort of shift tab up to the list of tabs, and then it will take you, you know, to headings, links or lists or whatever. And then JAWS has this weird thing. You have to go through the different F keys, the different function keys. Insert F5 for headings, F6. You know, is it F5 for headings and then F7 for links?
Yes.
I think I'm right in saying that. But that's... I just do it all through muscle memory. I don't know what I'm pressing half the time, but yes. I get to it. But that's the thing. So, you know, okay, there are benefits on one side and benefits on the other. And downsides on one side and downsides on the other. But I think for everyday use, I think it would be more, I would lean towards Windows. And it's funny because when I bring my work laptop home, I use it far more than I use my Mac, or I would use any kind of Mac. Now, you might wonder, why not Chromebook? Because I did say that Chromebook was viable, it was a good system. Why would I not put my money there? Well, I'm not saying I wouldn't, but I think of the Chromebook as a slightly different device. I know people who are sighted could use it for pretty much anything they want to, because most things nowadays are online. But I don't think, where I am anyway, with the concern, I mean, certainly with things like, you know, web accessibility, big question mark around, would the website be accessible? Because if it's not, that's it. And of course, that's the same on a Windows machine and a Mac as well. You know, if the website's not accessible on one, it's not accessible on the others. But I think that the next step of it is that I don't have apps on there, like audio editing apps, like things I might use that I need.
With the Chromebook, that's it. It's either web or nothing, really, apart from the Android apps, maybe. But yeah, that you are more limited. I still think, impressed as I was with Chromebox, I still see it more as a replacement for something like a tablet rather than a a work PC.
Yeah, if you're looking for something that's a high-end or higher-end productivity machine to really get some, you know, like you were talking about, Stephen, some audio editing or, you know, that kind of a thing where you need that processing power, you need that ability, I don't think that's even what Chromebook is wanting to be at this point. I mean, eventually it might get to that point, but I don't really think that's what it's designed for. It's designed to be more of a leisure device, I think, kind of like an iPad or tablet, like you said, Sean, that it's more the take on vacation, take it to the beach, you know, have it just, you know, sitting in the living room on your lap kind of a thing, like you would use a tablet. I don't think it's even meant to be a high-end productivity machine, and that's fine. That's it's found its role, and I think it's a good role. And as we found, ChromeVox works good enough to get that job done, but I wouldn't use it to do any of that high-end stuff.
Well, I suppose at this point I should probably say why I've made this final decision and how I can be so sure of it. I think it's because when you're using screen readers, there comes a point where you have to make a choice. You can't just jump around as much as I enjoy doing that. It gets a bit cumbersome. And you have to choose because there's so much to learn. So that was why I took the decision. Now, whether or not I'll use JAWS long term, I don't know, if I'm honest. Someone said to me, and I won't say who, I won't embarrass the person by saying on the show, but someone said to me this week that because Sight and Sound have the sale on during the Sight Village week, you know, you can get JAWS for less money. The person said to me, well, I'm not going to do that because I then have to then go and buy it again or buy updates for it.
SMAs and the...
Yeah. So that person decided they weren't going down that route and instead would use NVDA and get it with Eloquence, ideally.
Yeah.
I think some people are selling it as part of a product deal, but you can get Eloquence through NVDA. And for those who don't know how to do it, I'm going to do a thing on it on the show. So, you know, hang fire, because if you don't know how to do it, you can do it. And it's a lot cheaper, I think, than some of the alternatives out there. And certainly a lot cheaper than spending the money on JAWS or anything else, if that's what you want to do. So there are options out there. And I'm going to do a bit of a feature on that in the coming weeks. But yeah, so I think I probably will move over to NVDA at some point, because I think it's good. I think with Eloquence, it's brilliant. Has its hiccups along the way, but then so does JAWS. You know,
yeah,
the other
everything
week,
does.
Last week, in fact, I had my work PC with JAWS. It just kept stopping speaking. Nothing out of it. The only way to get it back was to turn the whole thing off and on again.
Fix all.
That's really frustrating. So it happens, you know. And maybe the Mac's better at that because it's built in. Maybe it doesn't crash as much. I don't know, but I think I have to make a choice. And it's not that I don't like the Mac. It's not that I'm dissing the Mac in any way. I certainly wouldn't diss Mac or the Chromebook. I think they're very good. But I've made a choice, and that's mine. So,
and let's see how long you stick with it.
Yep, start the clock. Let's see how long this lasts.
Hang on. Well, you know, to be fair to myself for once, what are you guys surprised at how long I've taken interest in JAWS, considering how difficult it is to learn?
Yes. I've got to say, look, I think you gave Mac a good old go, and you have stuck with JAWS. You've actually took some training on it, haven't you?
Took some training on it and learnt a lot, and just... You know, a lot of the groups out there on Facebook, like there's JAWS users groups and there's VI user groups, and having signed up to all of those, I learn so much. And it's, for me anyway, everyone's different, but the way I learn best is when I need to know something. So if I need to know that command now, then it will stick. If I just happen to hear something or get taught 15 commands, one of them will get in.
Yes, a deadline's a great teacher.
It exactly. Can be, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, and to be totally fair with you, Stephen, I mean, Sean and I know, pulling back the curtain a little bit, not only have you been extraordinarily fair to VoiceOver on the Mac and JAWS on the PC, but you've been very fair with NVDA and even tried out Narrator a little bit. And you, even with the ChromeVox here lately, you know, you may not have been as fair to it at the beginning, but you gave it a great try, and you did your research. You found out what was going to be best for you. So yeah, in all fairness, you actually have made a proper go at all of these, and so I think it's a good decision based on good research. So we'll see.
It almost sounds like I've done my work on this. It kind of feels like I've done something useful. Yeah, but, you know, actually, you know, in all seriousness, in all fairness to myself, and I'm being very fair to myself today, you know, I have actually put a lot of research into the different screen readers that are out there. And, you know, having tried them all out, and I feel I've tried almost every one, Android fans, beware. I'm coming for you next.
I was going to say, Android Dolphin and Serotech are all saying, what about us?
Yeah. But, you know, the majority of the ones out there that I would say are in our world mainstream, I would say I've tried out. And I think that, that you know, NVDA on a PC is no bad thing. Hopefully Narrator one day will get there. But anyway, that's my story. You can argue amongst yourselves. Feel free to do so and tell me your thoughts. I'd love to hear them. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Now, Sheila's been in touch. Sheila Armstrong, who is part of the Torch Trust, a fantastic organisation, and she has been in touch this week to tell us about something she bought, which, well, Sheila's not suggesting this, but I think might help us get rid of some of the hot air that develops around this show.
Hello. I'm Sheila Armstrong from Torch Trust, and I'm sitting in my office here, and it's very, very hot. So hot that I decided to go onto Amazon and order myself a desktop fan. And I thought you might want to know about it, because even if by the time you hear this, it's not quite so sunny as it is now, it's lovely to have a fan that you can just have quite close to you running off your computer from a USB port, and that's what this one does. I don't think I've got any extra plugs around here that I can plug in a normal fan into, so that's it. So the fan is in front of me. It's called a USB desktop fan, and it's by a company called Daffodil. And I did get it from the Ace store, but I'm sure you can get them from other places as well. In case you're wondering how much it was, it wasn't too bad. It was £11.95. So I've got it in front of me. It's about the size of a 45 record, or a big side plate, if you're too young to know what a 45 record is. And it's got round, you know, like spokes out, like a normal fan would have. Now, the only thing about this is, and it might be a deal breaker for you, is that you can't get it to swivel as well as blow. It claims that it's quite quiet, and I'm going to let you hear it now, see what if you think it's quiet enough. We've got a lot of servers running in here, and they're making a lot more noise than this does, so in here it does seem quiet enough not to disturb anyone. So here it goes, I'm just turning it up. Oh, it might make a nasty blowing sound over the mic, I hadn't thought of that. So that's it at its full tilt, and it is blowing a lovely breeze straight at me. I'll turn it back down again. So on the top, there's a little circular thing, quite easy to grip hold of, like a volume knob, and you just turn it to the right, you know, clockwise to turn it up, and anti-clockwise to turn it down. One end of the lead plugs into the computer, and the other end, which is a circular thing, you know, more like a headphone jack, plugs into the top of the fan. There's a carrying handle at the back should you want to carry it, and it's got rubber feet on the base to stop it skidding about on the desk. The only thing I would say is my computer happens to be on the floor, and the plug-in for the fan is right at the top of the fan. If they'd put it sort of nearer the base, I would have had a bit more flexibility where I could move it around on the desk. But I guess if your computer is in a different position, the position of that cable might suit you better. So I hope you enjoy getting a fan for £11.95 from the Ace store or from any other provider that may be providing it. Bye.
Bye, Sheila. Thank you for that. I have to say, I am a huge fan of USB fans.
Oh, that's exactly what I was going to say. I love that, Sheila. I love these things. I've got a few of them, not this specific model, but I think they're amazing. I mean, the batteries on them, the ones I've got, you can charge them up as well. And they last for so long. I use them on trains when I'm traveling. They're just, I know, I get so hot. I was traveling over the weekend and it was so warm, and we're all stood in the corridors because there was no seats, and I'm there with a nice fan in front of me, and everyone's looking at me with daggers because I was cool. And I just think these work so well. I love these. And the price is so good.
Yeah, you definitely can't argue with the price. And there's so many of these good portable fans out there. I love the USB fans. Stephen and I the other day, Sean, when you were on holiday, we were talking about fans that you can plug into the lightning port of your iPhone, which are really inexpensive. They do kill your battery, but they're yes. but they do work. They are nice. They do work really well. They make small portable air conditioners now that you know, pump out air in a different way than just a fan, and it's nice and cold. And they're all so small, so portable. And like you said, Sean, even some are rechargeable and inexpensive. So yeah, this is a great recommendation, especially when it's been so hot. I know you guys have been boiling for the last month or so that you're not used to it. And even here where I live, it's been so hot. Oh, it's just been ridiculously hot.
I would say as well, Sheila, look into getting a USB extension cable. They're only cheap, and you can then you can place it wherever you like.
I like the sound of this one because it's, I like the fact that it's got the knob on it to turn up and down, you know, increase the intensity of the fan. That's quite good. And having a look at this on the A Store, it's a 7-inch fan. So because normally these USB fans are quite small.
Yeah, I was surprised when she said the size of it. A dinner plate. I do remember 45s, though. Unfortunately, I am that old.
I have hundreds of them still stored in the closet, yes.
But that does sound... I haven't actually seen one that large before. The only thing I don't like is the... It's not a standard micro USB connection on the fan side. It's one of those weird, as Sheila said, like a headphone jack almost. That makes it a little bit more difficult. You can't just grab a cable out of your pile. But other than that, fantastic.
You can get it at different prices, and obviously there's loads of other ones on sale as well. Generally, you'll find, I don't know how big they are, the little ones that I've bought in the past are, I can't even think what size, I'd almost say the size of a CD.
Yeah.
In terms of the sort of, I'm waving my hands frantically here trying to describe what I mean. But yeah, okay, size of a CD. And they're good, they're quite cheap. You can get them out of like... you know, Home Bargains and B&M and, you know, all those kind of shops do them now. You know, but also these ones you get off Amazon or whatever, you know, they're all fine. Apparently, if you buy it in black, it's $10.95. Just saying.
Save a pound.
If you don't care what color it is, great, save money. So that's good. But yeah, that's a really useful thing. And I'm really glad you brought that up, Sheila, because that's the kind of tech we like to talk about from time to time. Because that's the kind of thing someone listening to this show will be going, hang on, I didn't even know this existed. And, you know, if you work in an office... And, you know, sometimes you're not allowed to plug stuff in offices now. A lot of offices won't let you plug your own stuff in. So if you can just say, well, look, can I plug this into the computer? Usually that's fine. Or if you're at home and like us, you're, you know, geeks that sit in rooms with lights off, then you probably need a bit of air in there.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, I am speaking for myself. Right, shall we look at the mailbox? Because there's a few things I want to get to in there. Jingle, please.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
Bing bong.
Here's your mail today.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah, every time. Okay, so we've got a few emails in. I just want to start with Julie Rodaway's feature last week. Julie, of course, referred to a talking power bank. These are these battery chargers that you get for on the move. You know, should your phone be running out of battery, like mine's always is, then, you know, you can take this thing with you, you can plug it in the move, but this one talks as well. Now, Julie had mentioned that she got this out of the States. We had a couple of emails in. Maria got in touch with us to say, I'm in Australia listening to you. Hello, Maria. Hello, Australia.
Good day.
And
sorry.
Really? Did you just do that?
Sorry.
He did. Hello, Maria.
If you... now you're going to call her Sheila, aren't you? That's the next thing. You're going to say, how are you, Sheila? G'day. You know, I have to say, Maria, the only thing we really know about Australia is everything that we watched on Neighbours growing up. in my case, anyway.
I thought you were going to say Crocodile Dundee, but wow.
That as well, that's an option. Wow. Is that where the Americans
got Australia
from?
We're making it worse. Let's just let it
yes,
go.
Yes, okay.
We are making it worse. How dare you, Sean?
Disgraceful. Sean, you started this
I'm
mess.
I'm sorry. Right.
Right, go and sit in the corner. Right, so we did talk about that. Maria had said that the fan, or she was wondering if the talking power bank was available in Australia at all. Well, look, I honestly, I have no idea. But Julie didn't refer, I don't think, in the article to where she got it from. It's kind of a standing joke here on the show, Maria, that we tend to talk about one store that starts with the letter A, ends in the letter N, and has Amazo. No, that's wrong. Mazo. Yeah, in the middle. I'm terribly dyslexic, clearly. But basically we're talking about Amazon. So check it out there. I think that's probably more likely we'll get it. Interestingly, here in the UK, Julie got in touch to say that it's now available in Computer Room Services, Steve Nutt's company. So if you want to find out more about the Talking Power Bank, you can get it here. £80 is what it's coming in at, which I think is about the same as it would be in the States. So you can get it there. From Steve, so Computer Room Services. So that's good. So thank you for updating us on that one, Julie. Appreciate that. Also wanted to say hello to Tony, who had been in touch as well, who wants to ask some information and advice around Toyota. Now, at this point, you think...
Cars?
Hang on. Have you stumbled onto the wrong show? Well, no, Tony hasn't, actually, because he's quite right. Toyota, if you remember, last year, was it? They came out with this Project Blade. Yeah, that's what it's called, Project Blade. It's a wearable thing. I have to say to me, and this is how it was described to me, so if it doesn't look like this, I apologise to Toyota and the entire world. But it was described to me as it was like a toilet seat.
Oh, yeah, that you I remember. Wore.
Now you remember it, right, because I think I said this at the time.
Now you mentioned toilet seats, it's all flooding back.
Quite literally, yes.
Oh, my.
Oh, dear.
I'm flushed.
This show's going down the toilet.
Yeah. Not for the first week. Not for the first week. But, yeah, this was a thing which was essentially like a mobility aid, wasn't it, that you could wear, and instead of using a cane, you would stick this thing around, stick your toilet seat around your head and march out for a walk.
We're not really selling it here.
No.
Not much of a fashion statement, no.
I don't think this is how Toyota are planning to sell it in their marketing. but that's how it was described to me. So the short answer is I don't think there's been anything since, because Tony's asking really, is there any more information? Well, no, there hasn't been anything. I haven't seen anything about this Project Blade since it was announced. There was a bit of... interest at the time we talked about it on the show, but since then I have not seen it once come up.
Somebody at Toyota realized it looked like a toilet seat and they pulled it back immediately, probably. I don't know.
Well, that's the trouble when we talk about this sort of hardware and these devices, you know, most of the time you're talking about prototypes, and from a company like Toyota, they're always doing R&D into this, and you know, sometimes it just goes away and you never hear about it again.
Yeah.
It could have been one of those things where they were wanting to more test the sensor ability of a device like this so that they could then take those sensors and implement them into the vehicle itself and maybe not actually have a true accessibility device. I don't know that to be true. I'm just speculating. Maybe that's why we haven't heard any more, because it was more of an R&D thing, like Sean said. But yeah, I haven't heard anything more about this in a long, long time. So I don't know where this stands.
To me, this is a bit like eye research. You know, when you hear these articles, you see them in the paper, and it'll say, you know, oh, cure for blindness found. Well, and it's like, when you read the article, yes. It's kind of more like, well, maybe, but not, we're not really sure. And, well, it might happen at some point, but it won't be in your lifetime.
Yes.
And that's kind of what this stuff is like. You know, we hear a lot of these projects that are ongoing, and they're often trying to get somewhere else. You know, that's maybe the purpose is to find out more about a specific piece of as you see the sensors, so maybe tech in there, how that might work with driverless cars or awareness. It does actually tie into a bigger story, I think, this week from Apple, bizarrely. And this is a really bizarre one, actually. I'm not sure what to make of this. This is a story from Apple, which Tim brought up to me and brought to my attention, around Apple devising a mobility aid for blind people. Now, essentially, this thing, and here comes my what it might look like. You know, it's so difficult to do the what it might look like game with blind people, isn't it? But essentially, it's like the top part of a cane. That's what it looks like to me, from anything I've been able to see on it. It's kind of the top part of a cane. So if you took the cane part away and you were just left with that rubber bit at the top, that's it.
I was waiting for you to say a toilet bowl brush.
That could work.
There's a theme.
There are many other things I could have said.
Tied into your toilet bowl lid.
Lots more things I could have said, but this is a family show.
yes.
But essentially, it's a very basically, it works on the premise of it's got sensors in it. It's got the capability to recognize things, possibly even the capability to recognize things via AI. So if you imagine taking seeing AI to the next level and having the ability for your cane to not only tell you that there's an obstacle in front of you by touch or by sound, but to even name that object and say garbage can in front of you, human in front of you, man with guide dog in front of you, get out of my way. Why do you have that dog? Get one of these things. You know, that kind of thing. It sounds good, and the detail in the article it is very detailed article actually, but it's kind of one of those things. I think really Apple doing this. I mean, if you'd said to me Microsoft were doing it, I'd have believed you 100%. But Apple doing it, you know, I know, and it really is an interesting point in all of this because Microsoft are really putting themselves out there to be the, you know, the absolute champions of inclusivity and accessibility across all disabilities for everybody. So I just don't know if maybe Apple are thinking we need to do the same, or whether, like the Project Titan, or not Project Titan, what do you call it? Blade, that was it. That, you know, is just a project and someone's leaked out the information.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Tim. This is just a
You're wrong.
Thank you. This is just a patent, isn't it? This is a patent, as
this
you would say.
This is a patent. A patent, as we would say here. Yes, but a patent. It is, to an extent, that it is just a patent that they're looking into the research of this. However, like Stephen said, this article goes into extraordinary details. And so a patent wouldn't, I don't think, cover as much detail as what this article really covered, with the tactile nature of it, the size and scope and shape of it, how it would interact with an iPhone or an iDevice, what it would be able to interpret, and how the sensors would work. It's really quite descriptive, and I don't know that a patent would cover that much specificity, if I can say
that sounds right to me. Yeah, well, it's almost like they actually have the hardware, they've actually, you know, developed the device rather than come up with the ideas for it. But I mean, we just don't know. This patent was registered in 2015.
Yeah, it's not like it's a brand new patent. But that being said, I agree with Stephen that, to an extent, if you had said to me Microsoft was doing this based on everything that they've been saying lately with seeing AI and everything else that they've been doing and the money that they're putting in the accessibility and technology, yeah, that makes sense. That's something they're doing. Now, that being said, though, Apple has a history of making things accessible. Of course, we wouldn't have accessible touchscreens most likely in the form they are in today without Apple. So the accessibility that they put into their products, you know, historically has been very good. But to have a specific accessible device like this that's so specific to a particular disability, that's not something they've done before. But again, this is Tim Cook's Apple, not Steve Jobs' Apple. Not that Steve wouldn't have looked at this, because he was definitely a big part of VoiceOver coming to the iPhone. But this is something that, you know, Tim Cook, I could see maybe being involved in. So I don't know. I'm interested in this. It sounds awesome. If they could really do this and pull it off, I think it would be really cool.
I would love to have been in the room when Steve Jobs said, right, let's do accessibility. I would just love to have been in the room. Not so much just to hear the conversation, but to hear the tone of the conversation. Because the impression of Steve Jobs that you get, true or not, but the impression you get is that he was a guy who just kind of, right, okay, just get it done, move on.
Yes.
That was the impression that was given.
No one's done it before. I have no idea how you're going to do it, but I want it done tomorrow.
Exactly. It was like, it was a challenge to him. And it was a challenge that he wanted to take on, as in he wanted the company to take it on. I think the idea that, you know, Apple did it because of some big picture, you know, idea, I think that came later. I think when they saw it working and they saw the potential, once the geeks had done their bit,
yeah,
and actually made it, that was when people thought, actually, do you know what, this works. But you know what Tim's saying is right. I think that Apple are very good at creating a universal approach to disability, which is our products work for everybody, no matter who they are. That's always the argument. I always used to try and get Apple on here to talk. For years and years and years, I used to be on the phone to Apple, California press office, the UK head office, and a press office, and I'd say, right, come on here and talk about your products, talk about accessibility. At the time when, you know, it was fairly new, and they would never come on because they used to say, first of all, they would say two things. They'd say, first of all, we don't need to sell our products. You're doing that already. Fair enough, I suppose. We talk about them every week. We talk about them all the time. But secondly, they said it's not a feature that we want to promote so much because it's just a part of our service. It's just a part of what we do. So this kind of flies in the face of all of that, that it's not something that's designed for everybody, although other people can use it, of course, but it's not going to be used as a walking stick because it's not a stick. It's a thing you hold in your hand. In fact, they're even...
Isn't it called a discus?
Is that what it's called?
Is that what the name they gave it? I thought it was called discus.
Right, okay. Well, it could be. But, I mean, there was a suggestion that it might even not be, in the end, handheld. It might be something that attaches to your jacket or something that goes inside a jacket.
Hat.
I mean, I don't know. It just seems bizarre. But the fact that, like I say, if any other company had been if we were talking about any other company or MIT in the States or any other person talking about, we've come up with this design, you'd be like, okay, fine, yeah, whatever. That sounds brilliant. Shows it when it's done. Apple are doing it. It's like, hang on, what?
Well, and even if it was somebody like Google, I mean, how many different things do we hear out of Google all the time where they're throwing money at this project or that project and they never happen? You're always hearing this speculative rumor about, you know, different pieces of hardware or whatever that Google's making. So even though they don't have a big accessibility history, I wouldn't even have been shocked if it had been Google. But with Apple, it's like, this is so specific. But that being said, maybe they see the writing on the wall. How many, you know, hundreds of millions of people in the world are blind now? And you read all these articles all the time on how many people the next 10 years, 20 years with macular degeneration or other aging type visual impairments will be blind or lose vision in the coming years or decades. And so maybe they're seeing there's a market here for this. There is something that's a need.
You're so cheerful, Tim.
What?
I'm depressed.
I'm so sorry. I'm not meaning to bring it down to that, but I'm just saying maybe they're seeing those numbers and saying there's something we can do about it.
We can make money there.
Yeah. We have the technology. Listen, let's make that money. No, but I mean, in the end, they are a business, though. They are a company, and they're about making money. And if at the same time they can provide a product that gets to those millions and millions or hundreds of millions of people that can help them, well, then they make money and they look good at the same time.
Of course. Look, sounds fantastic. We're all agreed. And the fact that it's Apple is cool. I would just say don't hold your breath. Apple register thousands of
cautiously optimistic
a year. Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll wait and see.
Okay. Right. Well, moving on. So we were actually doing emails, believe it or not. So let's get back to one. And this is from Jules Allen. Jules has very kindly decided to help me out this week.
Hello, Stephen and team. Julian here, still an Android user.
Boo!
I'm recording this in the hope of sparing your eyeballs a little. Aww. It's about navigation apps, and it's partially a whine and partially an appeal for help, really. I've been trying navigation apps on my Android phone, four so far, being ViaOptiNav, Corsair GPS, Get There, and Lazarillo. I'm not terribly happy with any of them, to be honest. Partially that's down to the inherent inaccuracy of GPS. There's nothing we can do about that, I suppose. But secondly, because they don't seem to take any interest in getting people across a road. Let me explain. My favourite test route for navigation apps is from my home to the local newsagents. This is only about 300 metres, but it involves a zigzag through a housing estate and then crossing a busy high street. Now, all four that I've tried will get me through the zigzag of the housing estate, albeit with the inherent problems of not being terribly accurate. But when we get to the busy main road, none of them actually tell me there's a road to cross, and more importantly even, none of them tell me where there's a safe place to cross. Now, if I try to cross that road at the point that I intersect it, I'm going to die. Simple as that. I'm going to join the Hedgehog Club. End of. Being local, I know that if I turn left for about 15, 20 metres, I'll come to a zebra crossing, where at least I've got some chance of getting to the other side of the road. But none of the Android navigation apps I've tried so far even tell me that zebra crossing is there, let alone try to get me to it. And I would have thought that in apps designed specifically for visually impaired people, getting across roads in one piece is a pretty essential requirement. So I'm just asking, does anybody know if I'm missing some magical setting that'll solve this for me? Or do they know of another Android app that would do what I want it to do? I live in hope. Keep up the good work. Many thanks. Julian.
Well, thank you, Julian. Excellent question. Great to hear from you. And you know what? I appreciate that, because having to read that email out would have killed my eyes.
Always thinking of you. That's so nice.
It is nice. No, I appreciate that. Right, this is an interesting one. I think, and I'll just put my case on the table and you guys can argue it. I don't think any app would do that at this point, purely because Apple or iPhone, Apple or Android, because it's down to the data, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, this is a really tricky one. It's down to the map data. And this is a case where I would think you would need a couple of apps. One GPS to get you through the housing estate and get you the, you know, turn-by-turn directions. And then this is where something that you need to drop breadcrumbs or reference points. On iOS, I would think of something like Blind Square. So you would drop a marker at that crossing where you know the crossing is, and then switch apps and it would guide you into that. I do not know of any on Android. We need the Android Anorak.
Yeah, where's the Android Anorak when we need him, the mixture of what could be done on the Android phone for this? But that being said, I agree with you, Sean, that you're going to get only so far with the turn-by-turn directions, and then waypoints or breadcrumbs or something that you have. Obviously, you have to set ahead of time, so once you're at a place, you can set that up for the next time. But those type of apps, like Soundscape, like Blind Square, are going to be so important. Now, we are hearing rumors, I don't know if we'll have time to cover it in the news this week or next, but Apple is working on enhancing their map system and getting more details about not just routes, but buildings and the specifics of those buildings. And that's going to take some time, obviously. So I don't know if that will fix an issue like this, where the improved Apple Maps in the future will help you with that information. But right now, I think Sean's right. I think getting there the first time to drop a waypoint or a marker of some kind for the next time, I think that's probably the best bet available right now.
Problem you've got there, though, is you've got that means you have to be able to do the route with someone else who can see,
right?
So they can show you where the cross point is. Like Jules says, he will die if he just crosses the road.
The Hedgehog Club, so, I love that one.
The Hedgehog Club is just brilliant. That's going to live on the show for a long time. But you know, that is a problem, a definite and a real problem. And I wonder, if this Apple Maps, I mean, we're talking about Apple here, though. I mean, Jules has an Android phone. But, you know, if we're just looking at Apple at the minute, because it is in the news about the Maps app getting a big reboot, if they can add that data to the Maps, and I don't know if they share this data, I imagine they probably don't, but, you know, do they share that data with other companies? Can Google buy in that data?
I don't think they will. They're usually very closed when it comes to that. But that being said, once they announce and release that data and show the world what they've done, you know, Google's going to go right behind them if they haven't already and try to match it. So I don't think it's going to be, you know, an issue for Android. Google will make sure to do the same thing.
I don't think it matters right now what phone you've got or what app you're using. That would be my take on it. But I think you're right, Sean. So let's imagine that you've got someone with you, Julian, and I don't know if you do, but if you have someone with you going that route to find that cross point, maybe you use something like Soundscape or Blind Square. I mean, Soundscape's great because it's free. Is that on Android yet?
No.
Are you joking? Right, okay. Come on, Microsoft. Get it on Android. I mean, Microsoft...
I don't think so. No,
Remember the old days when Microsoft used to hate Apple? Now they're just happy and love together. get it on Android, because, you know, people need access to this. Because, first of all, it's free. But, of course, Blind Square isn't on Android either, is it?
No. But the point I'm making is that, you know, there must be some sort of equivalent app on Android that allows you to drop markers, GPS markers. It's a combination of the two apps. I don't know of any GP apps alone that combines the two. So you're going to need the two. This is where we need the listeners who do use Android to say, well, this is a great GPS app. This is a great Waypoint app. You know, and that's what we'll go for.
And I know there are specific Waypoint apps out there for iPhone and for Android. I know some that I've seen are even just for people who are sighted that want to drop a waypoint for their car when they park it somewhere and they want to just remember where their car was if they've, you know, lost it. So there might be an equivalent of that type of app, even if it's not a specific blind or visually impaired made app or something like that. Maybe it's not even a GPS type directions app. You could just find something that's just waypoints only. And even if you find that, that would be enough.
Well, listen, it's over to you, our dear listener, because we don't know the answer to that one, but you might, and hopefully you will. Email in techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We are not going to have time to get to the news, although in saying that, we did cover quite a lot of news in the show and amongst
all
this.
We snuck it in here and there.
Yeah, we snuck in some. But yeah, there's lots of stuff going on at the moment, quite frankly, and we want to hear your thoughts. Now, just a quick program note. I did say this week we were going to hear from Gary Price. He has done a review for us on the Speakon Media Suite. Kind of fell a bit behind with my editing this week, so it's my fault. But I kind of want to just enhance on a little bit of what Gary's done, because Gary's done a brilliant job with his review. And I have to say, Gary, first of all, thank you for sending in the review of Speakon Media Suite. Can't wait for the listeners to hear it. I've already downloaded it based on his review and trying it out, because I'm quite intrigued by it, actually. It's a really interesting piece of software. So if you haven't heard of it, then you will be hearing it soon on the show, so stick around for that. If you have got anything you want to send in, maybe a review of something, you know, whether it be a USB fan or whatever it might be, I don't mind. Tell us, because, you know, it's always good to talk about this stuff. Email your audio to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And if you are wanting to record something but you're a bit unsure as to how to do it, get in touch with us and one of us will come back to you and give you an answer to that. Because, you know, I can imagine a lot of people saying, well, that's all well and good saying do that, but how do I do it? Well, come and ask and we can tell you. We can even direct you towards a brilliant, if not rather old podcast now, actually, when I think about it, from you, Sean.
Oh, well, it must be brilliant then.
Don't push it. It was decent. No, it was good, actually. And it was all about how to record using the iPhone, I think, at the time.
Oh, voice memos, yes.
That's right, yeah. So, but you can do it on all. You can do it on Android as well. And there are lots of different apps out there. Some of the Android phones have got stock voice recorder apps in there. And that's all you really need, you know? Just use that. And then often you can actually share your recording via email, which is great. So, yeah, please do that. And, yeah, that's it for our show this week. We'll catch you again next week at the same time, as always. Tim and Sean, as always, thank you.
Thank you. That went quick.
Yeah, it went very quick. Thank you very much.
Exactly. And check out the podcast. By the way, just if we have time to mention very quickly, there's a brilliant podcast up on our RNIB Tech Talk feed all about the new bump-ons that you can buy from RNIB. Bump-ons are back, guys.
Oh, I love a bump-on.
But they're not called bump-ons anymore.
Boo.
Check the podcast for all the details. Catch you next time on Tech Talk.